You're listening to Talking GAA with Dave O'Grady. If you want to advertise, sponsor, or simply get involved with the program, send us an email to theworldstalking@gmail.com. That's theworldstalking@gmail.com. Chat to you soon. You're very welcome back to Talking GAA for 2012, the first show of the year, and the leagues have kicked off. I'm going to be talking to all our fans from Cork, Meath, Armagh, and of course Kerry as well on the show. Kerry, of course, beating the Dubs this weekend. Coming up on the programme, we're going to be looking back at all the games in the National Football League and looking ahead to the upcoming clashes. And we'll also have hurling with BTFM's Stephen Long. We're going to be looking at the Waterford Crystal Cup and the Walsh Cup as the finals approach. Joining me first on the show is Aylby from Cork. Aylby, you're very welcome to the programme. It's good to have you back.
Thanks very much. I'm actually from Kerry.
Oh, you're a Kerry man, are you? Oh, apologies, Janie. I'll be crucified for saying you were from Cork. Apologies for that, Aylby. Well, you'll be happy enough with the performance of the Cork footballers then against Armagh. A game they really should have won, but to lose, a player, it was never going to be that easy, was it?
Absolutely not. And I suppose it was a tale of two halves. Cork dominance in the first half and Armagh dominance in the second half. Armagh played very well in the second half. They came back really well and I suppose they could have won the game in the end. But I suppose on reflection, a draw was a fair result. Paul Kerrigan was a big loss to Cork when he was sent off.
Yeah.
I suppose the manner in which, although they were down up there, the manner in which Armagh came back from being behind by so much, I suppose the manner in which Cork let them back into it would be a worry for Conor Coonan. But again, it's very early in the season, so they will fix those matters as the year goes on.
Indeed they will, and I want to introduce our fan from Armagh. He's no doubt the Armagh legend of Damien McCullough. Damien, let's just look at this. Did Armagh get off easy here? I mean, it was, in fairness to Armagh, there was, I think, five league debutants on the side, and obviously there was the absence of the Cross McGlenn contingent, so they were always going to be up against it, against this Cork team.
Oh, look, there's no doubt about it. At the start of the match, Armagh would have took a draw with an arm and a leg, and they would have done the same at half time. And then once the match was over, I think Armagh was pretty annoyed that they didn't take the 2 points. And I suppose the sending off had a big effect on the game. At the end of the day, you know, Armagh could have had Finney Moriarty sent off at the same time. So it was lucky enough that Armagh got the draw. Like, it's a good point, and Cork will definitely take points from the other teams. So from an Armagh's point of view, we'd be happy enough getting, well, I suppose you could call it a result out of it, but at the end of the day, 2 points would have been good, but we're happy enough up here with the one.
They were up against the 14 men of Cork at that, and I know that Cork are pretty good, but I just thought that you might have seen a little bit more from Armagh being at home in the Morgan Athletic grounds. I mean, Armagh have really made that their home, haven't they?
Oh yeah, well, you know, the Athletic grounds, you know, it's just all been rebuilt, and there's a great buzz about the place. The stand, you know, the people is on top of the field, and it is intimidating when there's a big crowd in there, and there was a fair enough crowd yesterday. I know it's hard to travel from Cork to come up to Armagh, and it is hard to travel, there's no doubt about it. But at the same time, you know, Armagh's going to have a tough year ahead of them. But we're looking forward to it. Another big one next week down in Kerry, so looking forward to a good result down there.
It's always good fun when Armagh go down to Kerry. Well, that brings me to our second Kerry man on the show. Owen, welcome to the programme. Just a quick point on this match, Owen. The Rebels, they looked set for the win. They were leading by 5 points at the break, but as the lads were saying, you know, the sending off played a key role. Cork will be disappointed now with that, but as Damien probably says, you know, Cork are going to pick up points by most of the teams that they play against.
Yeah, how are you doing, Dave? I think Cork can be very upset. I think Coonan can be very, I know he came out today and thought Kerrigan sending off was not a straight red. I watched it 3 or 4 times and I couldn't see any way the ref could not have sent him off. I think after the original altercation, he went backwards. He put the head into the Armagh player. He didn't strike, but he attempted to strike with the head. That's a straight red in my eyes. But Cork, they came back well. Mark Collins had a great game at centre forward. They kept Armagh scoreless from play for about 50 minutes. But that man in wearing the number 14 jersey, Malachy Mackin for Armagh, he ran the whole show for brilliant game. That's a good point for Armagh. They'll be happy with the 1 point because they won't be getting nothing next weekend.
Yeah, they're back in the big time, really. And Aileby, just a point to you. I wanted to get your views. Did you think it was actually a sending off? I mean, I've seen a couple of the replays of it, and you know, there was a little bit of handbags, and then you see the elbow. And was the ref a little bit too hasty, or would you go along with Owen there and say, yes, red card, no doubt about it?
Well, yeah, well, I suppose you could have, in such a case, you know, one ref would give a straight red and another ref would give him yellow straight away, so give him the benefit of the doubt, perhaps. But I do think it was straight red, and I suppose refs have to be seen to clamp down early on the year, because in previous seasons, perhaps they would have been seen as not to have been strict enough, I suppose, on disciplinary matters. And I suppose if they are seen to be strict on these things early on, they will make players stand up and take notice and know what they have behaved themselves on the pitch.
Yeah, indeed. And Damien, a final point to you. What can Armagh bring to take on Kerry on at the weekend? How do you think it's going to be? I mean, they're going all the way. They're going very, very south.
Well, lads, the heart says Armagh and the head says Kerry, you know. But who knows, you know. I was listening to Paddy O'Rourke's interview on the local Armagh website here earlier on, and basically he said that Armagh probably give Cork too much respect. And if you give teams too much respect, it sort of maybe puts the fear of God in some of the young lads. And my attitude is, look, lads, get out there, give it a lash and see how it goes, you know. And it's going to be tough for Armagh going to Kerry, you know. You would fancy Kerry to win it, there's no question about that. But, you know, another draw would do us lovely, and we're quite happy with that.
No doubt about it, and I wouldn't be surprised in the slightest if it was a physical encounter.
Well, just before you finish, you know, when you talk about the sending off yesterday, it probably was a soft enough sending off, like, but at the end of the day, the players know if you lift your hand, you've got to go. So, you know, a wee bit of maybe ill discipline, and that happens in these matches. So, look, there's nothing wrong with a bit of physicality. It's not ladies' football. That's the bottom line, lads.
Oh, well, a lot of ladies footballers there, Damien, would disagree that they'd happen to say ladies football is very physical. But anyway, let's not go down that road. I want to introduce our other fan from Mead. David is joining me. And David, I'm going to give you the Julie honour of talking about Dublin's defeat to Kerry in Croke Park in front of a pretty good crowd of 45,800. It was disappointing for Dublin. I suppose it wasn't. I was at the game myself and I thought that both teams were relatively poor. I mean, there was so many wides kicked by Kerry in the first half. They kind of improved in the second half, but Dublin had a bit of intensity there, but it seemed to fizzle out as the game went on. What did you make of it?
I think Pat Gilroy came out afterwards and, you know, he was saying that the Dublin were terrible. Just from their point of view, I don't think he'll be too unhappy secretly because, you know, we've all seen teams win in All-Irelands and they come out the following year. They might get a bit of a beating in one or two matches, and I don't think it does them any harm. I don't think Gilroy deep down will be too unhappy because it'll give the Dublin lads a bit of a wake up call. I mean, I saw a few people saying it was an inexperienced team and they were trying out a lot of new fellas. Like, you look down through that Dublin team, pretty much every single one of them most of them were well established players last year, and there were any of the lads that weren't nailed on starters were making impacts as substitutes. So, you know, you couldn't say it was an inexperienced lineup. So, I think secretly Gilroy won't be too unhappy. They'll have gotten a bit of a beating. It'll bring them back down to earth. He can bring them out training whenever it is, maybe tomorrow night, and say, right, lads, you know, you can forget about last September. It's all about looking ahead now and knuckling down and proving you can do it 2 years in a row, you know.
Was there a few signs, though, David, from Dublin's exit in the O'Byrne Cup to Kildare that the Dubs might are still in All-Ireland fever, you know, they're still in on that kind of bandwagon, they haven't come back down to, this is February, this is what we have to do?
There was possibly some indications of that, but I mean, let's be honest about it, I don't think anyone's really getting themselves too up for the O'Byrne Cup, certainly not a team that's won the All-Ireland, you know? So I imagine they were, you know, they were going back into the league, and maybe, you know, maybe there was still a bit an element of that about them, but they may have been thinking, right, well, once the league starts, we'll get going. But a defeat like this at the weekend, albeit, you know, the first round of the league and everything else, they kicked, like, Kerry could have won that game by an awful lot more. They could have won it by another 6 points with all the wides they kicked. So, I think it'll be kind of, it might do them no harm. They're playing, they're doing Mayo next week, which is going to be a hell of a tough game for them as well. So I think, you know, Gilroy will, he might have been kind of going easy on them until now, as far as, you know, giving them a kick up the backside goes. He's always been kind of an affable enough sort of guy. But I'd say after Sunday, or after Saturday night, I should say, it gives them a good excuse now to go, right, lads, you know, you can settle back down to work now and remember that you're All-Ireland champions, but you're not going to be for much longer if you keep playing like that.
Yeah, Owen, what did you make of Kerry's performance? I think there was 12 wides in the first half. It was a bit of a horror show, but then they really got it together in the second half. And when you have players as lethal as Brian Sheehan, and I mean, what about that goal by Darren O'Sullivan on the 55th minute? RTE showed it a couple of times in their replay or that on Sunday night. It was a terrifically well-worked goal.
Yeah, it was a great goal, and made again by a man making his debut there, young Patrick Curtin, and he looked very lively coming on. Jack O'Connor's got to be happy. James O'Donoghue and Barry John Keane both playing in the corners. They kicked 3 points apiece. Sheehan, 8 points from midfield. Like, they were good performance, and lads like Brian Maguire and Shane Enright there, young guys coming through, they played very well. But again, there on what David was saying, Dublin... Well, Dublin didn't want to lose that game under no circumstances, but at times this looked a bit silly. Dermot Connolly was all over the place. He kicked 5 wides. Kevin McMenamin was outstanding. Now, he was the real player again for Dublin. He kicked 3 points. I thought he was very good. But Dublin, they were mixing around. Massey Quinn was taking frees. Dermot Connolly missed 2 horror frees.
Oh, really bad, yeah.
You'd be wondering why Cluxton isn't taking them frees. Cluxton is now their recognised free taker. So why wasn't he taking them frees? He would have nailed them. Dublin might have went in a point up at halftime. Could have made a different game. I thought maybe Gilroy might, even himself, be still in All-Ireland celebration mode. It's time to get back into it. The Leinster Championship won't be long coming around again.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And Ailby, you know, just a point on Dublin there. They have to go, or they're at home rather, to Mayo. It's going to be a tough old encounter. This league isn't going to be easy for them, but again, they'll have the opportunity to right the wrongs, and probably they'll focus on a lot of the mistakes that they made in Croke Park.
Absolutely, and it just seemed from the way that they capitulated this last to get Kerry in the second half, it seemed that they weren't really tuned into the whole occasion, and that the revenge factor for Kerry was more important for them to win the game than perhaps for Dublin to win it. But I think after losing last day now, Gilroy will probably come down hard on players, and the competition for the starting places will become a lot more intense, and the training will probably become a lot more intense, and I think it will be important for them to beat Mayo next week, and instead of starting off the league, having lost 2 games and getting into sort of a losing habit, it will be important for them really to win. And I think it will be important for Dublin to at least make the semi-finals of the league this year to build on last year. So I think that although Mayo are always tough to beat, I think Dublin will really have to set down the marker this weekend and go out with their heads right from the throw-in, and I think they possibly will win on Sunday.
Okay, well, it is actually quite a hard one to call, because you've seen various Mayo performances over the past few years, especially in the league, and again with Dublin. I mean, if Dublin were to keep that consistency that they had last year going, you never know, but it's going to be very hard. Looking, lads, at the Down victory over Donegal, and I want to come to yourself, Damien, on this. I caught a bit of this game, and to be honest, I thought it was going to... I wasn't sure which way it was going to go, but I suppose Donegal, last gasp free... Dermot Malloy down held on for the victory. It was a pretty exciting clash there in Newry.
Oh, look, there's no doubt about it. And I think if Malloy had sat the ball down and maybe kicked it off the ground, it possibly could have went over the bar. But I mean, you know, the younger footballers, they seem to think that, you know, it's easier to take the ball, kick the ball out of the hands. And maybe if you set it down, particularly with the long frees, you get them extra couple of yards. But at the end of the day, it looked as if a draw was going to be the end game, but Down held out, and you know, I suppose Conor Lavery, the smallest man in the Down attack, I mean, he's a will-o'-the-wisp, he was everywhere, you know. And Liam Doyle coming back for Down, a mighty game, and like, he scored, I think, 1-4, so a great player, very he hasn't been about this while, but he's back, and Liam Doyle is a superb player, and there's big, big games in Liam Doyle, and it's, you know, it's going to be great fun now this next couple of weeks, because I think 4 points can keep you in this division, so it's going to be a tough one.
Yeah, everybody I think up and down has been ranting and raving about Doyle. 1-4 and there's 2 from freeze, but I mean scoring it under pressure as well, and I think a lot of credit has to go to Down. They've been able to maintain the momentum and produce players despite the odds, I suppose, up in Ulster.
Oh look, that's exactly right, and at the end of the day, Liam Doyle is a seasoned campaigner. Liam Doyle is a superb footballer, and you know, he did play for Down back in 4 or 5 years ago, and then he went out, but he's back in again. But we, us up here, we know that Liam Doyle is a superb footballer. And it's exactly right. Once the pressure's on and you step up to the mark to take the score, Malloy had a chance, he didn't do it. Young McVerry, big learning curve for him for Armagh yesterday. He had a chance, one of the other young Armagh players coming in, Rafferty, he had a chance as well, and they didn't do it. But up comes Doyle, sits the ball down, clips it over the bar, takes a score.
Yeah.
It's experience.
It's terrific stuff, and hopefully we'll see a lot more of him, and he can nail his place now in this squad. I want to come to yourself, David, and one of the key things we discussed on last year's programme was the style of football of Donegal, and one of the positives possibly that could be suggested is the fact that Jim McGuinness and his men, you know, they didn't really change their style. You know, you've seen them keeping plenty of players behind the ball, but at the same time, they broke with pace, I thought, and they did tend to use the open space as well. So, I mean, all is not lost with that system.
Well, no, I think what you'll see with Donegal is, you know, what you saw with Dublin a couple of years ago, in that they'll start off, you know, it's a kind of an evolution for them where they'll, you know, I heard an interview with McGuinness there last week only, and, you know, he said that, you know, he has a vision for the way he sees Donegal football going and the way he sees that team playing. He doesn't necessarily see it, he doesn't see it, you know, being as, you know, negative necessarily as it was last year. I think he was just putting something in place that they could build on, which he has done. Now, you know, it took them so far, but ultimately they came up short against Dublin. They probably should have won that game if they'd taken the shackles off a slight bit in the last 10 minutes. So I think what you're going to see with Donegal is an evolution from that very, very negative pattern of play last year to a slightly more forward-looking, I would hope so anyway, slightly more forward-looking style of play this year, where, you know, they can kind of mix and match, like mix the defensive play that they have in that style with a little more attacking football. Because
yeah.
I don't think, I know we've discussed it before and we've had different opinions on it, I don't think that style of play, and it's fair to say the most negative style of play we've seen. I mean, I know we've seen Tyrone Hunt and Pax and Armagh, but they would all attack in numbers as well when the opportunity arose. Donegal didn't seem to do that last year. They seemed to always leave one man or two men up in the other half. So I don't think they're going to get any further with that style of play. They need to evolve it a little bit, and I'm sure that's what you're going to see from them this year, and I'm sure that's what Jimmy McGuinness has in mind for them as well.
And Owen, just finally, really, on Down, really, like Armagh, they're coming down south and they've got to go to Páirc Uí Chaoimh to take on Cork. How do you see this one go? It probably won't be as intense as the All-Ireland final there 2 years ago, but it's still going to be a nice one to have a look at.
Yeah, Down kind of went missing last year, and maybe the year off kind of did them well because they've started there very well. There was a great result against Donegal above. But they'll come down to Cork again now. They'll look to get their first win on the board. But look, Down are doing well there. They've that Dan Gordon's back playing good football in the middle. Again, Liam Doyle there, and Mac Pole and Benny Coulter, these lads will be going down looking for the 2 points. As one of the lads was saying there about Down are probably looking for to safety first. They'll be looking to keep there, and another 2 points down in Cork might be enough to keep them up. But it's going to be a great game. I think probably home advantage could swing it for Cork, but it'll be very close.
Exciting stuff. And lads, just another game now in the Division 1 of the league was, of course, Mayo's win in Laois, 111 to 8 points there. ALB, there's no surprises there. We never know, as we said earlier on the programme, we never know what kind of Mayo team are going to turn up, but we a little bit disappointed not to see Laois run them a little bit closer. I mean, they did have the likes of Munnelly and that playing, but I think Munnelly only got something like 2 points or that. And I mean, Mortimer did his duty and kicked the points. And of course, we've seen Freeman there with a goal and 2 points for Mayo.
Absolutely. Well, I suppose Laois will be able for relegation from the moment the start of the league. And when the Bookies were making their podcast 2 or 3 weeks ago, Laois will be able for relegation. And it certainly looked like that will control, they continue on playing like this. I suppose they had a good league last year with promotion, but they failed to build on that momentum in the championship. And I suppose Justin McNulty was saying that he had a lot of work to do his first year in the in the job and perhaps second year this the real progress which you want, the real example of Johnson McNulty's management has both would come through to the lads, but on the evidence of the other night to play against Mayo, to play this, they could be heading straight back to Division 2 again. And I suppose a couple of years ago when Leash had a great minor and under 21 team and won a few titles at underage level, and those players have never really come through to senior level, have never really sort of shone as we might have expected to at senior level. And it looks like Leash will struggle this year, and this although Justin McNulty is a very good manager, it just looks like as if the tender is not there at least to cope with the bigger teams and to get a few results against the bigger teams, the more notable teams as Kerry, Cork, Dublin, etc.
Yeah, yeah. And Damien, just on the Justin McNulty factor, how long do you think it is before we're going to see a real, I suppose, improvement? A lot of people, particularly no doubt a lot of people up north, are thinking that he'll do what Kieran McGeaney has done to Kildare, you know, and really brought a resurgence from the county. But taking on Leash, it's a very difficult job. It's going to be an uphill struggle. And as Aylby was saying, they'll be very fortunate to stay in Division 1 of the league.
Yeah, well, they've tipped Armagh and Leash to get relegated up here in the Gaelic life, you know. But I suppose from a Justin McNulty's point of view, you know, you need forwards to win games. And, you know, you can have great defenders and you can nearly teach anybody to defend, but you can't teach forwards to score points and score goals. And I suppose goals wins matches. And if you don't have a goal scorer or a recognised top class forward, you're not going to win and you're going to struggle. I know it's tough for Justin and, like, you know, I know there's a great debate on the GAA now about so-called foreign managers coming in, like from other counties and all that. And
yeah.
That's another debate for another day. You know, I suppose, you know, everybody's looking for instant success now, and that's not going to happen. And you've got to work on it. Like, McGeaney's with Kildare, and this is his fifth year. So, like, people maybe forget that. It flies around very quickly. So Justin's going to have a tough time. It's going to be a hard year for him. You know, possibly Mayo could be a struggler in Division 1 as well. I'm not sure. But we up here in Armagh, we absolutely love Mayo. And from my own point of view, we've got Billy Joe Padden and our club here, and he plays for Armagh. And of course, he came from Mayo. So we have a soft spot for Mayo up here. So we're going to tip Leash to go down along with somebody else, but not Armagh and Mayo.
Nice one there, Damien. And just Owen, a quick prediction. Donegal, Leash, Letterkenny. It's going to be a tricky one. Both teams lost their opening games. How do you see this one going? I'd imagine you're going to go for Donegal.
Donegal, yeah, they'll be looking to bounce back with a win, of course, and the home advantage. Leash, again, McDonaldy, he had a great league campaign with him last year. Probably disappointed a bit with the championship, but Leash, again, the county Leash is going through massive. There's massive interest generating in their hurling side at the moment, and maybe that's taken a bit from it. I see lads like Ross Munley and Kevin Meaney and Shane Julian there. They'd be from big hurling clubs as well in the county, and you're just wondering, is there a bit of an interest going back into hurling, and is the football being put in the bad burner? But as Damien said, they started the last day with Cullen Begley and Padraig Clancy in the forward line. They're not natural forwards, and you can't manufacture forwards, really, and maybe they're relying too much on the likes of Munley and Michael John Tierney. So I'll probably fancy Donegal, but I think the two of them could be scrapping for the relegation battle at the end of the year.
It's got to be very interesting, Division 1, as a very more difficult league than ones we've had, I suppose, in the past, particularly for the likes of Leash and Armagh, maybe. We're coming to the end of the show, and I want to talk a little controversy shortly, but first, I want to come to yourself, David. I want to go to Division 2 of the league, and of course, your own County Mead picking up an away win, or I think it was a home win to Monaghan, 115-19. You must have been delighted with that. I mean, Monaghan are a good league team, it's probably fair to say, but Mead will be more than happy with that.
Well, I mean, you know, the way the league went last year when we just survived with a draw against Tyrone in the last day, I think Mead will be absolutely over the moon with that win, you know. It was going to be, it looked like on paper it was going to be a very tough match, and it was. I mean, like Monaghan, the scoreline for people that didn't see it would suggest that Mead won quite easily, but Monaghan kicked 11 wides in the second half, and they were absolutely completely dominant for the vast majority of the second half, which just couldn't convert the possession into scores. meeting up the other end, and maybe as they have done over the years, are a bit more efficient and stuck over a point, and then they got a goal late enough on from Shane McInerney, which sealed it for them. So, I mean, I'm sure Seamus McInerney must have absolutely delighted going up against his old side and coming away with 2 points. So it's a good start for Meath, and they've Westmeath again. They've Westmeath next weekend in Mullingar, who were beating themselves by Louth at the weekend. So you'd have to say Meath would be favourites to win that one as well. So if they could pick up another couple of points there, it'd be good for them to be looking up the table rather than down, which they have been doing the last couple of years more often than not.
Yeah, good stuff, David. And we'll feature another game in Division 2 of the league on next week's programme. Now, lads, I want to just draw your attention to the little bit of controversy going on in the GAA at the moment. Not the fighting. We've talked about fighting enough on this show. But I want to talk about Johnny Johnston's situation. He's kind of in limbo, despite Cavan Gaels signing his transfer form. Now, we've had problems with this in the past with the likes of Eamon Fennell and that. One club doesn't want it. But the club seems to be fine about this. But there seems to be a situation with the Cavan County Board. They're standing in his way. They've refused to sanction the transfer on the grounds that they're not convinced he resides in Kildare. Damien, this is a bit of a bizarre one in the GAA. The fact that all parties are actually happy, but the Cavan County Board aren't convinced that he's not living in, that he's actually living in Kildare. What do you make of this?
If it wasn't so silly, it would be serious. Because at the end of the day, Cavan don't want Shawnee Johnson. Shawnee Johnson has stated in the paper up here this week that he is definitely living in Kildare. And if anybody wants to come and have a cup of tea with him in Kildare, they're most welcome to do that. I think it's a wee bit a bit of hypocrisy of the Cavan County Board. At the end of the day, why are they stopping a man from going to play football? If they don't want him, and he has an option of going somewhere else. I know we're not talking about Premiership football here and all that sort of stuff. The bottom line is, the lad wants to play football. He's a superb footballer. I'll tell you one thing. I wish we had him up here in Armagh. He would definitely be living in a house up here, because he's going with a girl beside me here. So I know Shawnee fairly well, you know, and he's a great lad. So I'm hoping that Cavan County Board see a bit of sense. So why not let the lad play? It doesn't happen to everybody. There's only a few footballers all around the country that goes. Look at Billy Joe Padden. Billy Joe Padden's from Mayo. He's living up here. He's working up here. Well, he actually works in Kildare, believe it or not. And he's playing football up here. So a bit of sense should prevail. Let the sensible man take over. Give the man his transfer. Let him play football and get on with it. That's what I say.
Yeah, Owen, coming to you on this, obviously it's a very bizarre, as Damien was saying, it's more silly, but it is serious. I mean, and you can't see the Cavan County Board's logic in this. Would you go along with that scenario in the sense that, I mean, just give the lad the transfer, let this be done with, he wants to play football, Cavan don't want him, what's the problem?
Well, again, if Cavan don't want him, and it just baffles me why they wouldn't, because he's a superb player, but if Cavan doesn't want him, why not let him go and play intercounty football? It is his dreamer, after all, to play for intercounty football. But I was talking to a man from Cavan during the week, and he isn't nearly sure. He sees Shawnee Johnson around the town every day. What's he doing up there if he's not living in Kildare? Why doesn't the man just go down, go into a flat for a couple of months? Thomas Walsh did it when he transferred from Carlow to Wicklow. Nothing was said. It was grand, but if the man is flaunting around Cavan, I don't think the county board have a problem with it. They're kind of hinting at him maybe to go down to Kildare for a while. But look, if he wants to play the county football, fair enough, but realistically, it's never going to do him any good, really. And it's never going to do Kildare good, getting them any of the outsiders. But maybe he's the man that Kildare are missing, because they're definitely missing that kind of an X factor forward. Again, it just baffles how Cavan don't want them.
Yeah, Ailby, how about that? Owen was saying he's spoken to a couple of guys in Cavan and it seems like he's hanging around the town. I know this is, I don't want to be stirring up any conspiracy pots up here, but what do you think about this whole thing?
Well, I should almost affect whether he's hanging around the town. I don't really know if it makes a difference, to be honest. If Cavan don't want him and Kildare are interested in him and he seems to have some sort of a connection with Kildare, I really think it's ridiculous to be dragging this out. There's much more important things going on, and if he wants to play for Kildare, I think really he should be let.
Yeah, I think so too. David, a final say to yourself on this. We see a lot of players and lads from, say, Dublin, they move to counties like Meath, Kildare, Wicklow or that. You know, if a player was to play for a local club up there and probably wanted to play for Meath further on, there wouldn't be any objection to it. I mean, is this just farcical at this stage?
I don't know. I mean, it's probably, you know, we probably don't have time to discuss the ins and outs of it. As far as I'd like to know how it first materialised that it was Kildare, like that was being, you know, talked about as the team he was going to go to. I'm not sure how that cropped up and how he ended up with an address in Kildare. Like, you know, if he's still working in Cavan, I'm not sure if he is, but I'd be interested where the Kildare connection came from. You know. It just seems kind of convenient that they're crying out for a forward of his class, and all of a sudden he has an address in Kildare. So, I mean, I don't have any problem with lads transferring per se, but I think GAA in general are just very wary of creating an environment where lads are going to start, and I'm not saying it will happen, but where lads are going to start, you know, maybe transferring willy-nilly. I know there's an example of Declan Brown has trotted out as how he didn't transfer when he was with Tipperary, but that's a good few years ago even now when he was playing, and we're moving into an environment where the training has been upped every year and lads are doing more and more and more. And, you know, I'd say the GAA are maybe just watching for a situation where in a couple of years' time, a lot of the top players from smaller counties are maybe trying to seek a move in this fashion. If it just could open up a can of worms. So I'd just be, you know, careful of kind of just rushing it through. And as I say, I'm not sure why Kildare or how that connection came up that he's going to end up with them, you know, because they're not even like a bordering county or anything. So it's a strange one.
Yeah, Damien, do you think this will open up the floodgates and open up a big can of worms, as David was saying? Do you think it'll bring about plenty of transfers now and there'll be no stopping it? Players will be signing for different counties left, right and centre.
No, I don't think so. Like, you know, at the end of the day, you're only talking about maybe three or four players in total. You know, if we go back, we look down through the years, you know, it happened from Leitrim to Dublin, from Kildare to Cork, even Mayo, Claremont. You know, those things happen. I know Johnny Morta wanted to go and play for Louth this year. Johnny Morta was actually born in Louth, but on his transfer form, he put down his home county as Armagh, and Croke Park didn't sanction it. So the GAA, sometimes they're an amazing organisation and sometimes they're so silly on what they do. And at the end of the day, if the transfer was given, we wouldn't be talking about it. It would be done and there was no talk about it. Get on with the game. So maybe it's people in positions of power like to hold that wee bit of, I suppose, knowledge is power in the GAA, and some people just don't want to sort of empower the people. They just want to keep it themselves. So I still say the lad should get his transfer and common sense should prevail.
Okay, final point to yourself, David.
Yeah, there was just one kind of similar parallel that I was looking back at. Rory Gallagher a few years ago when he transferred to Cavan, and he was still playing with St. Bridget's at the time. I think he did get a transfer in the end, alright, to a club in Cavan, but at the time of his transfer, he didn't. He was still playing with St. Bridget's. And I was just kind of curious looking back at that one. Was there less made of that because, A, Cavan, it wasn't going to look, Cavan weren't a team on the cusp necessarily of winning anything, and he was probably maybe not necessarily past his best, but he wasn't going to be making the difference to them and pushing them on. Whereas I just wonder, is that the problem people have? Is that Shawnee Johnson could potentially make the difference between Kildare nearly winning something and actually winning something? And that's maybe where a lot of the problem people have with it is that there's all of a sudden, and it shouldn't make any difference, but all of a sudden here we have a lad that could potentially be a marquee signing in inverted commas for a team and push them from kind of close to glory to actually winning something. Whereas when it's somebody, when it's a sort of a lesser player with a lesser team, it's kind of, you know, no one really cares about it and it's let go. And like, there shouldn't be two kind of different rules for two different players. It should be kind of consistent across the board. So it just struck me as a bit of a kind of a parallel with Gallagher. But like, ultimately, I hope that they sort it out. And like, you know, everyone wants to see Shawnee Johnson playing football, no matter what county they're from. So I hope they do sort it out. I just think we need to be a little bit careful and, you know, look into these things a little bit more and kind of before we just kind of go, right, you know, he doesn't want to play. A lot of the time people say, well, if he's not going to be playing with one county, sure, he may as well play with the other. But I mean, I just think that there's a bit more to it than that. We need to be just a little bit more careful and not kind of let lads just move willy-nilly. I'm not saying that you're going to have 10s, 20, 30 lads moving every year. That's not going to happen. But I just think we just need to, you know, keep it under control and keep an eye on it so that, you know, it doesn't kind of slip out of hand, you know?
Yes, David, I think that's a pretty fair point. And I remember Rory Gallagher was touted to be Dublin's next free taker when he's actually playing for Bridges at a time where Dublin didn't really have a free taker. Dublin were going through a bit of a transitional period at the time under Tommy Lyons or that, but that's for another day. Now, well, lads, I'm afraid I'm going to have to leave you now because after the break, I'm going to be chatting to Stephen Long about hurling, Waterford Crystal Cup and Walsh Club. Chat to you again, lads. Thanks a million. You're listening to Talking GAA with Dave O'Grady. If you want to advertise, sponsor or simply get involved with the programme, send us an email to theworldstalking@gmail.com. That's theworldstalking@gmail.com. Chat to you soon. Well, I promised you hurling and here it is. I'm delighted to be joined on the line by Stephen Long off Beat FM. Stephen, Limerick will meet Clare again now tonight in the Waterford Crystal Cup. They finished level after two periods of extra time in Six Mile Bridge there on Saturday night. A great game, you know, it's kind of renewing the old age rivalry so early in the season.
Yeah, it's a weird one. Like, I think when you go into games like that, all eyes are on, John Allen in his first competitive game, charge of Limerick. And then you've got Davy Fitz in with his native Clare as well. So I think there's more talk about the managers than the players going into the game, but it sounded like it was a fantastic game. 115-18 after two periods of extra time. After the second period of extra time, I thought they were going to have like a shootout or something like that to see. Because I know the winners of that game will play Waterford this weekend. So if whoever wins will have to play three games in the space of about 7 or 8 days, which isn't ideal when you're playing hurling at the start of February. But no, it did sound like a great game. The game tonight is impossible to call. It's really it could come down to one hook or one block. So if I was a betting man, I'd say maybe Limerick under John Allen might just shade it. But it's impossible to call, especially with when you're playing preseason tournaments. We've got players playing out of position, trying out new things. So
that was the one thing.
Not putting money on it.
Yeah, that was one thing I was thinking there, Stephen, about John Allen. You know, it was his first competitive game, and I guess his selection really, you've seen, it was really restricted by the injuries they had, and of course college commitments as well.
Yeah, and when you look at the scores from Limerick, I mean, Justin McCarthy got under huge pressure because of the way he handles the older players, and put the emphasis on younger players. But John Allen seems to be doing that as well. Declan Hannan scored. He's one of Limerick's brightest stars, and he scored 111 in the first game against Clare. Got a penalty goal and then six and frees as well. Mm. So
he mixed it up a bit. Yeah,
yeah, he did. He's a brilliant player, and he's going to be the leading Limerick forward for a number of years. So I think it's good to see John Allen kind of, in a way, continuing on what Donal O'Grady did, putting the emphasis on the younger team. And that's really what Limerick needs to be doing now, is build on for, they can't really, obviously they want to do well this year, but, it's 3, 4, 5 years down the line they should really be looking towards.
Exactly, yeah. And you look, I suppose, at Clare, and they had the likes of Nicky O'Connell and Aaron Cunningham, I think, who he hit something like six frees or something. I mean, it just goes to show, I know it was quite experimental, but it goes to show that they do seem to have a quality in depth.
Yeah, definitely. And it's the same situation with Davy Fitz and Clare, in that like Davy Fitz was signed on for a 3-year contract, which is quite a long period for an inter-county manager. But the way things are set up with the county board and Clare, I mean, it looks like he's going to have that job for quite a number of years. And he said himself as well, it's 2014, 2015 is his aim. But again, Clare obviously had a lot of success at minor level the last number of years, back-to-back Munster titles at minor level, which is an incredible feat in itself when you see the amount of young players that the likes of Tip and Waterford have coming through. So that's obviously a big, big boost for them as well. But like David Fitz says, there's only one thing in his mind, and that's the game against Waterford in June.
Yeah, indeed, I suppose there's no doubt about that. And I know there was over 1,000 spectators that were down in Six Mile Bridge on Saturday night. And, for them to see two experimental teams go at it and to be so close at the end, I guess they got their money's worth.
Yeah, totally. And, I think that is a good enough attendance for a game, on a Saturday night at the start of February. I'm sure it was, there was obviously good hurling on show, and I think that's what you really want to be looking for at this stage. It's just something to keep you entertained on nights like that. And when you get on upwards of 90, 100 minutes of hurling action, you can't really ask for much else when it's, a fiver in or whatever it was.
Yeah. And if you were to call it,
if you're to cut, it's so impossible to tell. As far as I'm aware, Limerick will have home advantage and it'll be on in Gaelic grounds. So maybe the fact that they'll be at, they're on their home turf, I think will just shade it for them.
Okay. Well, some more hurling now, really, Stephen, and the Welsh Cup is up and running. Of course, we've seen the Dubs get knocked out there by Laois, a pretty big scalp for Laois there last week. But I suppose Westmeath kind of put it up to them, 123 to 116, the final score there. But a lot of people were talking about John Power, obviously brother of Richie Power. He was the St. Kieran's college star of last season. He had a pretty good game in this Welsh Cup senior hurling tournament semi-final in Castlecomer there.
Yeah, it's just when you think that, you know, the likes of Eddie Brennan and all those have retired, you see more lads coming from the youth system. You know, obviously, he's coming from a good family. Richie Power is, you know, going to lead Kilkenny's forward line for a long time as well. So he's obviously another bright talent they've gotten there. You know, conceding 116 against a team like Westmeath, you know, you might say that's a bit of a surprise for a team as strong as Kilkenny, but it was a very youthful side. You know, I wouldn't be looking into that too much. And in the quarterfinals, they only snuck past NUIG, I think it was, by a single point, and they were behind for a lot of that game too. And if they lost that, I'm sure there would have been questions. But like I said, you can't really. The Kilkenny that play in February is a lot different to the Kilkenny that will play in August and September. So, you know, it'll be a good game at the weekend. You know, Kilkenny and Galway always serve up really entertaining attacking affairs. They play a very similar style of hurling as well. And Galway will be happy enough the way things have gone so far this year too. So, yeah, it'll be a good game.
And just a quick point, really, Stephen, on Westmeath. I mean, to take positives for them, it was a pretty determined performance by them. And I think Brendan Murta hit something like 110, 18 from freeze. So to put a marker down, it's good experience for those lads and for the county, really, to come out and put in a performance like that.
Totally, yeah. And when you think of, you know, you can analyse the Kilkenny starting 15 all you're like, but Kilkenny are still Kilkenny, and it was still Brian Cody that was on the sideline, and it was still up against the All-Ireland champion. So scoring 116 is obviously something they can't take solace from. And, you know, Westmeath, they're in that kind of awkward situation where, you know, they're between Liam McCarthy and Christy Ring levels of play.
Yeah.
You know, people will say to them, oh, they should be playing at their own level, playing the likes of, you know, Laois or Kerry week in, week out, and improve from there. Then you've got other people saying, no, they need to be playing the big teams like Kilkenny, Galway and Tipperary to kind of put themselves up against them. So, you know, it's a real toss of a coin what way works best for them. But you know, these preseason tournaments are obviously very beneficial. They're probably more beneficial for teams like Westmeath and Kerry, more so than the stronger teams. So like they'll look back on that Kilkenny performance and say, you know, we got 116 off the All-Ireland champions. We'll go into the league now, hoping to do the best we can and then heading into the championship as well.
And a quick point on Galway Laois. I mean, the Welsh Cup came to Duggan Park in Ballinasloe, and Joe Canning 110, a pretty accomplished display, but I don't think there was any doubt Galway were going to win this one.
I don't think so, no. Even with Laois's big surprise victory over Dublin, you know, Galway are always a side that, you know, regardless of their, some would say they're underachieving at championship level last number of years, they always play, they're always one of the better teams than most around this time of the year. They're always up there when it comes to the end of the league. So, you know, it doesn't surprise me. I think it was a 14-point victory in the end or something like that. So, yeah, it was a good workout for them. And I'm sure, you know, Joe Canning getting another number of points as he usually does, it's only good for him to kind of, you know, work his way through the next couple of months as well and going into the league. So, you know, if you asked me to call it, I'd still say it's impossible to tell until you see the teams that are going to come out. I mean, you could literally look at one Kilkenny team and say, right, I'd fancy Galway. And then if you put out a totally different, they could put out, you know, 10 or 12 changes and you say, okay, now you'll have to fancy Kilkenny this one. Yeah, I'll go for a draw then or something.
Okay, well, it's probably a very refreshing, Stephen, though, to say that two hurling cups young in the season are going to be so close and they're both very hard to call. That's a good thing, no doubt.
Yeah, no, these kind of tournaments are underrated. I mean, the fact that some games you're able to go in for free, some games they're only a fiver in, they're always kind of close enough affairs. And even like as we saw last weekend in the Waterford Crystal Cup, when you've got matches between the counties and the colleges, they always still end up being kind of good affairs to watch, in particular because you've got players playing for the colleges side who would normally be lining out for their county. So you've kind of got that little kind of, you know, interesting aspect to it that you won't find in the league or the championship. So they are a good addition, and especially now that the league has, for some bizarre reason, has been shortened so teams will only be playing 4 or 5 games instead of the usual 7 or 8. I think these kind of tournaments are probably more important than what they used to be.
Well, that certainly would be a great thing, especially if we got to see more and more hurling all year round. Well, I'm afraid we're out of time here on Talking GAA. My thanks to Stephen Long, Ailby, David, Damien and Owen. Don't forget, we have Meade's Mark Ward coming up on the programme next week, so you tune in for that. And also on the hurling side of things, we're going to be looking at the careers of Lark Corbett and John Milan, who've recently retired from the intercounty game. And we'll run the rule over that with the lads. Thanks a million. Chat to you next time.